Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. I'm happy to have y'all back here and would like to remind you that Zoo News is a crowdsourced news program. So if you happen to see anything that might be Zoo News worthy, then let me know by tagging me in it at Rossafari on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, at Rossafari Pod on the TikTok, and you can also email me, rossafaripod@gmail.com. And if you send me stories, whether I use them or not this week, I will thank you at the end of the episode. So that's exciting for you and for me. While you're at all those places, make sure you're following along. Make sure you hit subscribe on your podcast app so you don't miss any Zoo News episodes or any of my main podcast episodes. They are interviews that drop on Tuesday. And most of you already know this because you listen regularly because I have an awesome fan base that I love. Thank you all for being here. All right. So we'll start off by talking about, you know, like I do, me a little bit. And I want to set the scene of this podcast for y'all. So many years ago, before, you know, my son Miles was born or anything, my parents moved into their current house in Virginia. And one of the bedrooms in it affectionately became known as the Princess Room. It is painted bright pink. There is a huge mural on one wall that has sleeping fairies and a dog and a unicorn and a castle. I'm looking at it right now. And instead of a yellow brick road, there's a road made out of flowers. It's very pretty. It's very nice. And my parents thought that, you know, maybe someday I would have a child or children. And so they left it this way. And now when Miles stays here, this is his room. And for whatever reason, it became my room on this day. And the reason I'm telling you that is not only am I recording this episode in this room, but I just did an interview with two amazing people doing some conservation work out in Chicago, one of whom works with Shedd Aquarium. You'll hear this dropping relatively soon as part of my new Conservation Tales series that'll be dropping. And I was doing it on Zoom and in this room. So it was just a very, very pretty pink background. And I was just entertained by all of that. I also woke up too late for the interview and so had bedhead. It's really the professionalism that sets Rossafari apart. That's what I find. So, for those of you who have been following all of the adventures, you know that one of the reasons I'm at my parents' house right now is I am taking my trip back from Florida. And I got to tell y'all, we had a really good trip. Not only were the shows wildly well-received, like wildly, but got some good podcast content, y'all. We have interviews coming to you from Greenville Zoo, Greensboro Science Center, Jacksonville Zoo, the American Association of Zoo Veterinarians, Naples Zoo, Steve Martin, not the actor, but the trainer at Natural Encounters, Inc. And also, I just want to take a moment to say thank you to my many friends at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. I have not quite cracked the code on how to get approval for an interview there yet, which is funny because I have a lot of fans that work there and they've all tried. They were just not sure how to do it. It's not even that I've been rejected. We're just not sure how to get through the Smithsonian machine. We're working on it. But I have to tell y'all, I visited the zoo on this trip and the people there treated me so well. I got to have some really cool experiences and see some things I didn't think I'd ever get to see. So I just want to take a moment to say thank you to the people at the National Zoo. And also, if you happen to be a PR at the National Zoo connected person, let them know I'm trying to talk to them and feature their zoo, okay? And last but not least, in the personal updates, if you are listening to this on the day it releases, which is March 31st, then it is my birthday. And so happy birthday, John. Yay! If you want to send audio clips of yourself singing happy birthday to me, or if you would like to become a patron as a gift, you know, you can do all of that. Patreon.com/Rossafari. I get excited about my birthday. I think it's kind of cool. It's the one day that you get to celebrate yourself. And I feel like, you know, there's this whole thing. There's this big movement. A lot of people say that, like, as you stop being a child, you should stop being excited about your birthday. But no. Okay, here's Zoo News.
Well, it's 1 for the pandas, 2 for the bears, 3 for the monkeys. Now you should care. Now won't you listen to Zoo News? Oh, you could do anything but want to listen to Zoo News.
All right. So we're going to start off with some big news. There are actually a couple of really big stories this week. But the first one is that the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, our good friends in Columbus, Ohio, have officially re-earned their AZA accreditation. So it was a year ago that the AZA saw fit to not keep them accredited because of some weird financial things that had happened and some other stuff that had happened. And there's literally a bonus episode about this if you want to go back a year ago and see what happened. And a lot of people agreed with the decision. A lot of people disagreed with the decision. I was one of those. And in part, honestly, why I disagreed with it was that I just had the idea that it seemed to be more a slap on the wrist. It seemed to be, from even what they were saying, kind of like a one-year penalty, especially because the AZA conference this year is being held at the Columbus Zoo. So, yeah. And here we are a year later, and shocking news, the AZA has accredited the Columbus Zoo again. Look, I get it. It's weird and hard to be an accreditation body, and especially when you have to deny accreditation because of things that maybe happened in the past or happened with people that aren't there anymore or maybe are a little more behind the scenes than not. But we all knew they would get their accreditation back, especially since in the denial of the accreditation, the AZA made a point of praising the animal welfare at the zoo and how incredible the staff at the zoo is. So this is the least shocking but also most exciting thing to happen for a while because I think there would have been some real controversy if this didn't happen. So, yeah, whatever your thoughts on the Columbus versus the AZA thing are, it can now be settled. They're back, and they're ready to rock it like they always do. On Monday, March 27th, the North Carolina Zoo was able to successfully evacuate all 1,372 guests that were in attendance at the zoo after they received a security threat shortly before 11 o'clock in the morning. Animal caretakers confirmed that all animals did receive their morning meals prior to the start of business, and they were, you know, prioritizing health care for the animals and such based on medical needs. So, yeah, it's they haven't announced exactly what it was yet, but they closed for the day and then reopened the next day, and they had local law enforcement investigating the security threat. So, I don't know. This kind of thing, man, you know, it's just, you don't know what it was, but it's hard not to speculate and think that it ties into the anti-captivity movement and the fact that people have felt emboldened since the Dallas Zoo incident and the Zoosiana incident. And again, just to be clear, I'm not putting any of the onus on those facilities. They handled that with class and aplomb. But yeah, not loving this. So especially because it ties directly into our next story as well. Both the Detroit Zoo and Toledo Zoo announced this week that they have had to beef up security after being concerned about the incidents that I just mentioned, and of course Central Park as well, which I forgot to mention there, and also because it seemed like people may have been casing the Detroit Zoo. So that's not great, but the good news is that the people were seen and the zoo is responding accordingly. And since Toledo is right there, although there was no evidence that they were being cased as well, they're very close to each other. So Toledo has also decided to beef up security. And I think it might just be a thing where for a little while now, at least, zoos are going to have to put a little more focus onto security measures and making sure that there are more cameras and more ways to keep their animals safe and secure, not from the normal threats, but from idiot humans doing idiot things, which actually kind of makes zoos a little bit more like the wild, sadly. And actually, there's one other culprit out there causing some zoo animals to get out of their enclosures this week. But it's not quite a human. It's Mother Nature. So the Oakland Zoo was absolutely buffeted by crazy storms. Northern California has been just under attack by nature lately, y'all. And unfortunately, one of the open air aviaries had some trees fall into it. And fortunately, no animals or staff were hurt, but six birds did fly out of a hole created by the tree. The zoo did an incredible job getting the word out to the Oakland community. And during the week, five of the six birds have been found by people, and you know, hey, it was reported to the zoo, and then the zoo went and got their birds back, and keeper staff was out getting their birds, and the birds were cooperative, and everything was great. Unfortunately, one of their pied crows is still missing as of the time of this recording. So if you happen to be in the Oakland area and you see a pied crow, you can look up what they look like if you don't know, let the zoo know. I'm hoping that all six birds will end up back happy at home. And pied crows are awesome and brilliant and incredible corvids. Russell Crowe from Southwick Zoo, who you've heard about a lot on this podcast, is a pied crow and a good friend of mine. So while I do hope the bird returns home, if not, I feel like it has a good chance of surviving out in the wild, much better than most animals would. And then we have another really big topic in zoo news this week, which is a discussion of the director of the Henry Villas Zoo, Rhonda Schwetz. Now, I've talked about this director before, and it's not great news. Rhonda has been accused of many things, including not taking care of animals properly, and also a sexual harassment or possibly assault situation at the AZA meeting 2 years ago with a staff member that was on the trip with her. Well, that has definitely come to a head after Dane County and the group that runs the zoo in the county having agreed to pay $2.8 million to settle allegations of assault and sexual harassment and retaliation by Director Schwetz. This settlement is huge, and Schwetz and the AZA do not have to admit wrongdoing under the settlement, but court documents in the case show that Schwetz did make other sexual advances towards men in a bar during the AZA conference back in 2018 when all of this happened, which led to a verbal reprimand by AZA leadership. So this is not great, and now county board members in Dane County are calling for the removal of the director. In a prepared statement, Director Schwetz said that she has learned a lot from this experience and then highlighted her achievements at the zoo, of which there are many, as a reason to allow her to stay on. But my guess is that the writing is on the wall for this person, and it's probably time, regardless of whether or not she is admitting guilt. There's just been too much controversy at this zoo under one director, and sometimes that just means it's time for a new leader. I will say I have been to the Henry Villas Zoo, and from everything that I can see, it seems like the keeper staff is wonderful. It seems like the people on the ground doing the work are wonderful. So I still love the zoo and have a lot of faith in the zoo as long as the right thing happens here. And I truly believe that it is time for Director Schwetz to make way for someone else. So hopefully this gets settled quickly and the zoo can move on and return to its former good name. I also will be very curious to see what happens come their next reaccreditation session with the AZA in light of what happened with Columbus. Okay, this next story goes in a very different direction than the last one. And honestly, it might be one of my favorite stories I've ever had on Zoo News. At Metro Richmond Zoo, there is an orangutan named Zoe, no relation to my wife, who is a mother. And Zoe never learned how to be a mom since she was orphaned at 9 months old when her own mother died unexpectedly. After having her first baby and it needing to be hand-reared because Zoe did not know how to breastfeed properly, the vet at the Metro Richmond Zoo contacted Whitley Turner, a zookeeper and new mom herself at the zoo, and asked Whitley to breastfeed her own baby, Caleb, in front of Zoe the orangutan, in hopes that Zoe would learn from a live demonstration. The zookeeper agreed, and what she said about this, because I just think this is amazing, this is an exact quote. She said, "I just had my breastfeeding bra on, and I was able to show Zoe everything with zero modesty. I wanted her to be able to see the whole process because orangutans don't wear shirts. I wanted her to be able to see my breasts and see Caleb and be able to see him rooting and looking for it and the latch. With my bra down, I was very exaggerated when I put him on so that Zoe could see that the baby goes here. The whole time I was talking to her, pointing at the baby, pointing at her breasts. And when Caleb was latched, I was showing it to her, making sure that she saw the important part. The whole time she just kept watching me curiously. She didn't immediately breastfeed her baby, but she was definitely watching the whole time." And y'all, less than 24 hours later, Zoe the orangutan successfully nursed her baby for the first time. I think that is just wildly incredible. And that's not actually the only mom training that they gave Zoe. Well before she gave birth, they set up a TV inside so she could watch videos of orangutan mothers giving birth and caring for their young. She watched the videos over and over again and learned from these experienced mothers, and it seemed to work. Another zookeeper at the zoo, Jessica Gring, even showed Zoe how to hold and nurse a baby by using a stuffed animal orangutan. She did these demonstrations almost daily for months. So far, Zoe and the still unnamed baby are doing well, bonding well, and the baby is nursing. So congratulations to the entire team at the Metro Richmond Zoo for doing some really, really amazing training and teaching, and mad, mad props to Whitley for bearing it all to teach another new mother. We do not deserve such magical creatures. And yes, I mean orangutans and zookeepers. So this next story is probably not the most newsworthy in the sense that it's a very old story, but it's interesting because National Geographic just published an article called "Meet Mexico's Forgotten Panda. She's the last of her kind." And I did not know about this, so I'm guessing many of you did not know about this. But we all know that giant pandas are all owned by China now and are leased out to different zoos. And we've talked about that whole situation and how now Memphis has one and Zoo Atlanta has two and the National Zoo in DC has three. And that's really all the pandas you can see in the United States of the panda bear variety. Obviously, red pandas are everywhere and awesome. But this is really fascinating. So many, many years ago, in 1975, two giant pandas were gifted to a zoo in Mexico after the Mexican government recognized China's authority over Taiwan at the United Nations. Now, this is different than the loan system that we currently have. And these pandas produced offspring, which produced offspring. And now the grandchild of those pandas, Xian Xian, still lives at this zoo in Mexico. It is the only panda in Latin America. She is 33 years old, which means she's 5 years from matching the record lifespan of a giant panda in captivity. And she is truly owned by Mexico. She is not one of the Chinese loaner pandas. So that makes her really rare and also makes the whole situation very unique. Obviously, she's very old. And as of now, there's no plan for replacing her when she's gone because that would require getting into the whole loan program and all of that stuff. Sadly, she resides in Mexico City. And even though, from what I can see in the article, it looks like she's taken, you know, just the best care of. The city has kind of moved on, and there's so much stuff going on that Xinxin doesn't get a lot of attention from like the general public anymore. And so she's just kind of this forgotten panda in Mexico City who is being taken care of in her golden years. And I just found that story so fascinating. All right, so let's move on from some of those weirder stories and talk about some of the deaths and births that happened at zoos over the past week. Honestly, this was a tough week for deaths. We're going to start off by saying goodbye to Nick, one of the ring-tailed lemurs at the Naples Zoo, who I actually just recently got to see when I was there recording an interview about the primate team there. And so Nick was a very kind and gentle soul who kind of kept to himself, but really always looked beautiful just basking in the sun on his island, because that's how the primates are done there. They're on these cool islands that you get to cruise around. And I think I just got some really good shots of Nick. And so that one hurts my heart, especially not only was he beloved by the keepers there, as well as boat captains and really everyone. But this is an animal that I just got to connect with a little bit. So goodbye, Nick. Miss you. And then, man, this one also really hurts. Willow the giraffe, who was born at the Maryland Zoo in 2017, has passed away. A few days ago, Willow's care team noticed that something was off, and the zoo vets and other team members tried to treat the gastrointestinal issues that they found Willow was having. But unfortunately, the condition worsened, and they had to humanely euthanize Willow. Willow has inspired joy and compassion in thousands of people. She was a very awkward and social media famous calf that had ossicones that kind of look like pigtails. And, you know, I remember seeing her even the last time I was at the zoo for the AZA conference. It's just really sad. I have followed her story since she was born, and kind of thought we were out of the woods on that one for many years now. And so sending condolences to everyone at the Maryland Zoo and everyone like me who has been following along with that story and just fell madly in love with Willow. And sadly, that's not the only giraffe that we have to say goodbye to this week. In fact, the Milwaukee County Zoo has said goodbye to two giraffes this week. Bahatika, who was a male with a variety of age-related health issues, passed away unexpectedly at the zoo. Baha, as he was called, was born in 2005 and had been at the Milwaukee County Zoo since 2006. He was a very friendly giraffe and was one that was always present for giraffe feedings. And he was the first of the herd at the zoo to do a voluntary blood draw, as well as being the father of seven calves. That's amazing. And in the announcement of Baha's passing, the team at Milwaukee County also announced that another giraffe there, Rana, was experiencing age-related health issues, as she is a 30-year-old giraffe. And, you know, that can happen. And shortly thereafter, the zoo had to announce that Rana passed away as well. So condolences to everyone at the Milwaukee County Zoo, especially the hoofstock team that took care of both giraffes. And they said that if you would like to honor these giraffes, please make a donation to the Giraffe Conservation Foundation. Our friends at Aquarium of Niagara also announced this week the passing of Ryder, a charismatic stingray who would often hang out right along the glass of the Dangerous Beauties exhibit. Sadly, Ryder was found unresponsive, and her condition was not able to improve with treatment and observation. Ryder had been at the aquarium since 2015, and condolences to everyone at that aquarium who will miss her. Another goodbye, this time out of Turtleback Zoo, where they had to say goodbye to California sea lion JR. JR was 32 years old and was the oldest sea lion within the AZA's population, which also exceeds sea lion median life expectancy by nearly 10 years. He was really gentle and sweet, and he was a really good teacher, not only of other animals, but he also was a great teacher for new trainers. He was always the first sea lion that a new trainer would work with, which is really important. And in his time at Turtleback Zoo, he taught dozens of trainers how to excel in the use of positive reinforcement training while also continuing to learn to participate in his own healthcare well into his golden years. Obviously, just an incredible animal who inspired everyone that saw him, and our condolences go out to the team at Turtleback. And last but not least in the saying goodbye category, the Oakland Zoo has announced that 46-year-old African elephant Lisa was humanely euthanized this week. Lisa had been at the Oakland Zoo since 1979, and I have to tell you, seeing Lisa when I was at the Oakland Zoo was magical. There are just certain elephants that you can tell have lived, and Lisa was one of those. She had several years of chronic and degenerative health issues, and the zoo was using all kinds of progressive treatments and cutting-edge therapies, but it was no longer enough. By the end, she had ongoing eye ulcers, degenerative arthritis, and ventral edema, which caused excessive fluid retention in her belly, which then caused internal and external vaginal ulcers. So Lisa had a lot going on. She had a great life. She was a really important part of the herd at the Oakland Zoo, and they did everything they could for her. But in the end, it was time to say goodbye. The zoo truly did everything it could for her, including novel stem cell therapies, but in the end, it was time to let her go, and so they did. Condolences to everyone at the Oakland Zoo and everyone who's even been to the Oakland Zoo, because Lisa was really special. But the circle of life continues, and so here are some births that we are celebrating at various zoos this week. The Dallas Zoo has announced the birth of a baby giraffe and also the birth of multiple Parenti monitors. Now, these babies are really rare, and they're a really cool-looking monitor species. So congratulations to the Dallas Zoo for your monitlets and your giraffelet. Yeah, I guess we have to go the whole way with giraffelet. But okay, that works. Anyway, moving on from the goofy, there's actually another giraffe birth, this time out of Omaha's Henry Dorley Zoo, that I want to go a little deeper on. A giraffe named Zola recently gave birth to a giraffelet, also known as a calf to the real world. And unfortunately, the calf is not doing very well. So the zoo has been giving around-the-clock care to the baby. They are still encouraging her to feed from a bottle, and they are also assist feeding the calf formula until she's able to feed from a bottle. Now, you know, calves are used to searching for food in taller places because their moms are tall, And so they are doing all kinds of crazy different strategies to get up high enough to encourage a natural nursing experience for the baby. They're doing daily blood work, x-rays, and ultrasounds on the calf just to monitor the overall health. The veterinarians do suspect that the calf is fighting a gastrointestinal infection and so are administering medicine that will hopefully minimize any discomfort and fight off the infection. The giraffe is currently receiving plasma transfusions, which is going to be important because the baby's not getting colostrum, which is the mother's first milk, which contains important nutrients and also antibodies that prevent illness. So actually the father of the calf, Jawa, a 14-year-old male, is the donor of the plasma, which is just amazing and such a great example of why voluntary health work is so important with animals. And of course, they are also consulting with other facilities in the AZA community for advice and guidance. So the zoo is doing everything they can, and hopefully this turns into a really happy story. But honestly, in a way, it already is. First of all, it's a giraffe birth, which is, you know, always important. And second of all, they are doing so much work. Literally, the tallest giraffe caretakers are climbing on ladders and stools to grow a few feet to try to make nursing type stuff more natural. They've also been tucking the bottle under wigs, towels, and other props, including stuffed animals, to try to mimic there being a mother attached to it. And, you know, they're reaching out to all these other zoos and stuff. It's just, it's so cool, all the work that they're doing. And regardless of the end result, it's just beautiful to remember that there are places that do cool work like this. Our good friends at Adventure Aquarium have announced that there have been some more little blue penguin chicks hatched. I know I talked about the first one of the season hatching recently. And they've also announced that that one now has a name. It's Tater Tot. There is a little blue penguin chick at Adventure Aquarium named Tater Tot, and that brings me all the joy. And last but not least in births, the San Diego Zoo has announced the birth of twin Ammer leopard cubs. Leplets. Oh, leplets is good. This is a wildly endangered species, one of the most endangered in the world, with about 300, maybe less, in existence worldwide. These are also really, really cute cubs. So if you get a chance to check these out, either on the online or by going to the San Diego Zoo, I highly recommend that you do so. And congrats to the team at the San Diego Zoo and all of the teams that are having these amazing births. And to wrap up Zoo News this week, I have two cool stories out of our good friends in Providence, the Roger Williams Park Zoo. One of them is simply that Paya, the tree kangaroo joey that I'm in love with and got to go see recently, is now regularly hanging out of her pouch. It's not super newsworthy, but I'm putting it out there anyway because I really love Paya. And y'all should get there and see this little mini tree kangaroo ball of perfection. It's the cutest thing ever. Oh my gosh. Anyway, that's one bit of news out of Roger Williams. And then the other bit is a little bit deeper, maybe. Zoos always manage to amaze and inspire, and you know, they do it in a bunch of different ways, and you never know what's going to hit. For me, and I think for most of us, it's animals. But for a 7-year-old girl named Maddie, it was something else that Roger Williams Park Zoo has. You see, they have a pantry at the zoo, and this is set up so that people can go and, you know, get dried goods and stuff if they are in need. This is also a great place to make donations to the pantry if you would like to. So anyway, Maddie, this, again, 7-year-old, was walking by the food pantry and said, "Ugh, we need to have one of these," to her parents, which is adorable. So alongside her dad and grandfather, she constructed her own little pantry and put it up outside of her home. They went out, they got wood, they built it, they painted it. And it is a food pantry for people in need. And literally this little girl was holding the drill and putting the screws through the wood and doing the painting, all of which are things that I cannot do. So I'm impressed by that. And there's a sign on it that says Madison's Little Free Pantry. Take what you need, leave what you can. And it's open 24 hours a day, no questions asked. And she was inspired by seeing this at the zoo. And she just did the thing. And I love that this little girl just did the thing, when I know that even I, who try to do a lot of things for conservation and for the good of things that I care about, will frequently, you know, question if I can do something. And here she is doing the thing. So let's all be a little bit more like Maddie, shall we?
Conservation! Conservation! News time! Oh, yeah!
So we're going to start off our conservation news section with some details out of the new cheetahs that were relocated from Namibia to India. Sadly, Sasha, one of the female cheetahs that was moved there, has succumbed to renal failure. Unfortunately, kidney disease and renal failure are a problem for all cats, but are really bad in cheetahs. And even though she had been under the care of Project Cheetah veterinarians, she wasn't able to pull through. So she was a 5-year-old cheetah at the time of her passing. And sadly, she did not make it. So not a great start for the Indian cheetah relocation project, although I am fairly confident that that's not because of the relocation that that happened. Renal failure is a thing in cheetahs. However, there is some good news from the same project. The first litter of cheetah cubs, cheetlets, was born to cheetahs reintroduced in India recently. There are 4 healthy cubs who were born to Siaya and Freddie, who were released there. And so, yeah, this is really, really exciting. These are the first cheetahs born in India in a very long time. And yeah, I guess that's how these conservation projects go. You take a loss, you take a win, you do what you can and see how it works. So the birth is really exciting and the death is sad, but definitely nothing bad about the project. The Hawaii Marine Animal Response Team has recently announced that they have officially had 1,000 sea turtle responses since they were started in 2016. That's just incredible. They actually didn't even start doing field responses for turtles until a year later in 2017. So in 6 years, they have taken care of 1,000 sea turtles. Again, the idea of just going out and starting the thing and making it happen, you know, you go and do a thing and suddenly you've helped save 1,000 sea turtles. Congrats to everyone on the team. The Marine Megafauna Foundation recently announced a new scientific study that has been published in Endangered Species Research, which describes 2 new research techniques that have been pioneered in the Galapagos Islands. One of them is that it is now possible to use underwater ultrasound to study the reproduction of free-swimming whale sharks. And then they did more work and figured out how to collect blood samples from these wild whale sharks so that they can even better understand what's going on during the reproductive cycle. That's astonishing. And that's really good news because whale sharks are not the easiest things to, you know, go up to in the wild and get blood from and take care of. So this is a really big step in understanding this really big animal. This next story is really fascinating to me. Scientists in Japan have created mice with 2 biologically male parents for the first time. The team that did this actually generated eggs from the skin cells of male mice. And then those eggs were implanted into female mice to produce healthy pups. Micelets? Anyway, this is really fascinating for a lot of reasons. As you can imagine, the anti-woke, I hate everything I don't understand crowd came out loudly to say that this was a waste of money and a waste of research, and we should be curing cancer and not helping, you know, two men have babies, and that it doesn't really count because they had to be implanted in a female anyway, and all this stupid stuff. But you know, what the scientists pointed out is that this could really help with fertility treatments down the line. This could help same-sex couples to reproduce in different ways, but I'm going to take it a step further than what I saw being talked about, you know, in terms of humans. And I'm going to say, well, let's look at some wildly endangered species that exist. We're always worried about genetic diversity. And if you can start making different genetic specimens by taking the materials that we have and creating eggs from, you know, a male and then doing reproduction that way, then you start to get different sets of genes out into the population. And, you know, there are a lot of endangered species where, like, literally every animal is super important right now, because even if we can save the species, there are so few left that genetic diversity becomes a major issue. And we've talked a lot about how there are different cryobanks at different zoos and stuff that we can hopefully use to increase that genetic diversity in various populations over time. But yeah, this might be a new and interesting way to have that impact. So I'll be very curious to see where this research goes, and it will be a long time before anything can really come of it. But I think it's pretty darn cool. And, you know, it also ties into another thing that we've talked about a little bit, which is that there's a company that is currently working to bring back the thylacine, also known as the Tasmanian tiger. And we've talked about that, and I'm not going to go back into that whole story, but I do have another interesting fact about the thylacine, which is that the last known thylacine died in 1936, and it has been accepted that the species has been extinct since then. However, new research into suspected sightings suggests that their extinction date could be pushed back into the 1980s. And while that's historically interesting, I guess, it also actually makes a much better argument for bringing the species back, if that is a thing that's really going to happen. Because, you know, over time, the niche that is filled by an animal that goes extinct is usually filled by a different animal. There will be evolution, or something will happen, and that niche will get filled. So it's a lot more likely that that niche will not have been fully filled if this species was still around in the 80s than it is if it was gone, you know, decades before that. So again, just an interesting way to look at this fact and be like, oh, this might all tie together in an interesting way. It also may not. Who knows? This episode is really running long because there was a lot of really important zoo news this week. So I'm going to cut conservation news a little bit short. But for those of you who sent me amazing conservation news stories that are not in here, trust me, I have kept them, and they will probably pop up next week because I have so much cool stuff to share. But, you know, we're running long.
In other news,
there's a really awesome story out there right now that you could Google if you want to see some pictures and videos and such, about a girl in Washington State who helped rescue a giant Pacific octopus when it got stranded on a beach last week. The girl quickly ran when she saw what seemed to be a live and healthy octopus. And so her and her family took water with her little sand bucket and filled it up, and she poured it on top of the octopus, which helped keep the octopus alive. And that was really cool of her. And so she did the thing, and then they were able to get it into a bin and drag it out back into the water, which saved the octopus's life. So really cool work by this young girl, and just a nice, inspiring story. The New Mexico Department of Game and Fish is looking to add some professional bear huggers to their team. Now, these are conservation officers who have the ability to hike in strenuous conditions, the courage to crawl into a bear den, and the trust in your coworkers to keep you safe during the process. Part of which is literally cradling bear cubs when they need it. So you could go to the job listing at the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, and you can actually apply to become a bear hugger. We recommend you stick with the cubs, though. A recent study has confirmed that the North Atlantic right whale has the largest testicles in the animal kingdom. They weigh in around 1,100 pounds each when fully grown. So the combined weight of the two testicles is about the same as a Volkswagen Beetle. Now, that's something you know, and it probably forced something important, like algebra, out of your head. You're welcome. Also something that you will now know, there is a rapper named Rick Ross who owns a bunch of buffalo that live with him in Atlanta. And it turns out that they escaped and are now just roaming the neighborhood in Atlanta. Well, okay, apparently they're actually back by now, but they did escape and were roaming around his neighborhood in Atlanta, where neighbors are complaining not just because of the buffalo roaming, but because this is not the first time this has happened. Maybe rich people should stop having exotic animals that they can't take care of. Just a thought, just a thought. And last but not least in other news this week, a PA man was recently found dead in a house with at least 60 venomous snakes out of the over 200 snakes that he had there, as well as additional venomous lizards and a caiman, which, as I'm sure you all know, is kind of like related to alligators. It's a small crocodilian, but not that small. The snakes included a cobra and two black mambas, which are obviously extremely deadly. And he was found dead in this house. But good news for all the animals. Turns out that it wasn't a snake bite or anything like that that killed him. See, when police first found the dead body, they found a snake bite on the wrist, and they were like, oh, clearly this is what killed him. But the coroner was able to determine that it was an old snake bite and not the cause of death of this man that was found with all of these ridiculous animals. Hey, remember that thing I said about like rich people and celebrities not having ridiculous pets? Yeah, even though this isn't what killed him, that applies to idiot normal people, too.
Animal, animal, animal holidays. Animal, animal, animal holidays.
All right, and that brings us to our animal holidays for the week. If you are listening to this, the day it drops, that is March 31st. That is the last day of Dolphin Awareness Month. And again, it's my birthday. Yay! No actual animal days, but I guess we'll call it World Ross Safari Day. Something. I don't know. Anyway, and then that launches us into April, which is Ape Awareness Month and National Frog Month. And on the 1st of April, we celebrate World Water Frog Day. The 2nd is National Ferret Day. The 3rd launches National Wildlife Week, which runs April 3rd through April 7th. And then the 4th is World Rat Day. And those are your animal holidays for the week. All right, and there you have it, your Rossafari Zoo News for the week. I would like to say thanks to my Red Panda level patrons, Laura Shank and Kristen Dickey. And hey, again, a reminder, a great birthday gift is to become a patron of Rossafari for as little as $3 a month. You can help support the pod and get cool bonus audio and other nice little occasional surprises as part of the process. And then I'd like to say thank you to everyone who contributed articles this week, whether they got used or not. Like I said, got a ton this week. Still amazing content that you'll get to hear probably next week. Thank you to Anya Keen, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Mary Blair, Sean Fay, Dr. Zoe Rossi, Emily Rockbuck, Jason Cohen, Peter Oilo, Crystal Chapman, Liz Dunleavy, Paul Somo, Michael Sebastian, Marianne Rossi, Jacob Newman, and Sam Evans. Thank you all so much for your incredible, incredible contributions. I do want to let you know that I have been enjoying putting the occasional little something fun after the credits. I did it with the Joel Sartore interview, and I've got a little blooper for you after this one, just because sometimes when I'm recording these, my mouth doesn't work very well, and I thought you might get a kick out of what that sounds like. So make sure you listen to the end of the credits. And remember, friends, the words Newsy credits backwards are Steiderk Yiswen. The Rossafari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossafari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Rossafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo. Of twin Amur leopards. Oh my God, I can't say Amur leopards. Amur?